This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over my big, fat, Greek wedding! So if you haven't heard it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Oh, are you ready
for one dry kiss? One dry kiss!
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one free-to-be you-and-me movie in the month of April, where we are recapping today, My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
And I do have to say that was an absolute stroke of brilliance, Corinne. If you didn't recognize the song at the top of the show, that was Grease Lightning, because we're talking about Greek people who come from Greece. What? Yes. Play on words there, Corinne. Well done.
Yeah. It was either that or have it be like, tinka, 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 which is just... Exactly.
Which that is old classic.
Really difficult to like emulate into a theme. Oh, I am here with my lovely co-host who I don't need to spray Windex on to make more fabulous. She is just perfect all on her own, Miss Tamara Kosio.
If you haven't seen this movie, it might sound a little bit weird, but thank you, Corinne, because I am here with the alpha to my beta, the sigma to my pi, Corinne Edding.
Yes, Greek life. Woo-hoo. Oh, love.
Mm-hmm. And I chose this movie because I feel that Tula Portokalis really steps into her own. She doesn't start off as free being her.
Correct.
But she really comes into it.
She does.
In a beautiful and often hilarious, due to her family, way.
I just love the whole story about how this movie was made and like that Rita Wilson saw the play of this and she like went for it. She's like, we're going to make this into a movie, motherfuckers.
Yes. And her and Tom Hanks produced it with their Playtone label and it was a pretty big success, I believe. And loved it. Loved it. And shockingly, Corinne... Yeah. Most of the people in the movie are actually Greek.
I checked that out. I was like, mom is Greek. Dad is Greek. Obviously, the lead character is Greek. Mm-hmm. And then brother Greek. And even cousin Nikki is Greek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joey Fatone is not, though. Is he
he's
Italian.
He's Italian.
Okay. Close to Greece, but not Greek.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think so, but I didn't check it. I was just like, I'm pretty sure he's Italian, but at least they're on the right continent.
Yeah. A lot of the key core players are actually Greek, which was, I was really impressed by.
Mm-hmm. We don't have Caucasians playing Hispanic. We don't have Hispanic playing Italian.
We do have Italians playing Greek, though.
I know, Italians. But we'll give them a pass because they get an A for effort.
No, I mean, the majority of the players in this are Greek who should be. Mm-hmm. So that's impressive. There is no shade from me on that. I was looking into it this afternoon. I was like, and I bet click, 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 click. Oh, click, 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 click. Oh, click, 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 click. Well, I'm pleasantly surprised.
Yes. I've also got all kinds of Greek cuisine that I want to try after watching this movie as well. Oh. I'm on Oza. What is that? Oh, that sounds interesting. Which
Ouzo?
Is the liqueur they drink at the end. Ouzo.
Yeah.
Did I say Ouzo?
Yeah, you
okay,
said
that's
Ouzo.
How it's spelled. I don't care. I knew what I meant. I had a couple too many Ouzas. Damn it.
Oh, that's some vodka right there, basically.
Yeah. I haven't had it, but I see that they sell it at BevMo or Total Wine and more. And I am thinking about picking up some just to try it and say that I did.
Ooh, save some for me. I want to try it.
Okay.
God, I'm not going to be like,
I know you're not.
I just want to taste it.
I know. It's not all of a sudden you're going to be like, oh, this is the shit. And then half a bottle later, Corinne, You're going to be like Yaya running out into the street thinking you're being chased by Turks.
I'd be like Linda Blairing it with projectile vomit is what I would be doing.
Oh, and that's something that I want to be here for. No, it's not. No. That's why. Yeah. I have seen you taste alcohol.
Yes.
You're not like those people that are like, let me just smell. And then they accidentally throw it back and like, oh shit, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. You just take a little sippy sip and you're like, oh, that's what that tastes like. And then you put it back down.
But I mean, that's why I was like clarifying, because just also for the gentle listeners, because there's some people who are like, no, I don't drink at all. I just have little tastes of people's drinks. And it's like, sure. And it's like, me, I like literally just wet my palate with it. And then I'm like, okay, like, we're good, you know? Yeah.
I remember one time when we first moved to Hollywood, some of my brother-in-law's friends invited us to go play pool.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, there's this cool pool place right by your apartment. And I was like, cool. So we did some pre-gaming and we all walked there.
Yeah.
It was like, it's a good half a mile, which is fine, but I pre-gamed thinking we were going to walk a few blocks. So by the time I got there, I was pretty schnockered, because exercise and drinking with me do not mix.
Oh, no.
And I vividly recall like one of the girls it was like a group of us, but one of the girls was like really cool when we were at our house. And then she kind of got annoyed with me because I think I said, how far is it? Like 4 or 5 times, did like the drunk repeat thing.
Sure.
And then when we got there, like she was giving me the stink eye and I was like, boy, am I being out of line? Winds up that we were drinking the same thing and I kept stealing her glass because I thought it was mine.
Oh no.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that till I was leaving, and I overheard her say, she keeps taking my drink. And I was like, well, girl, say something. Don't just, I know.
You know what they say? You see something, say something.
Yeah. Well, needless to say, I don't think we ever saw them again. So that might or might not have been because of me.
Look, if everybody had drink charms, this wouldn't have been an issue. And I'm just saying, like...
Yes, well, the pool establishment that we went to did not seem like the type of place to have drink charms, but I'll let them know if we ever go back. And if I remember where it was, because it was quite a while ago.
But needless to say, we will not be walking there if we go there.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus. I'm like, you guys are those people that go on like 7-mile hikes, huh? Because they're like, it's just up here. 45 minutes later, I'm like, oh, you're totally worth it. We are so getting an Uber back home.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and also when you've been like drinking, that's not the time when you like want to go on extended walks.
Yes, no. Absolutely not. I mean, some people do, but not me.
Yeah.
No. That just makes me more drunk. It doesn't sober me up. It gets me slightly drunker before it sobers me up. So then I'm just, ugh. No.
Tamara, I have to say, I remember to do the synopsis today because you wrote, Corinne, can you conquer the synopsis? CYNOPSIS. And I love it so much. I finished the script. I closed it out, and I was like doing my thing, like doing a little worky work, whatever. And then I remembered synopsis with a C, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. I've got to do the synopsis. I just needed to like watch the movie first.
Yes. But it was C, because we always put the C in front of your parts and the T in front of my parts. Uh-huh. So I put C, as in Corinne, can you conquer the synopsis with the C? And then said, okay, that last part was a stretch. Synopsis with an S. But it's stuck in your head.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes. I'm all, see what I did there? See? Yes. I was really channeling some Sesame Street vibes, as in C is for synopsis spelled wrong. Ta-da.
That's good enough for me. C is for synopsis is spelled wrong. That's good enough for me. C is
maybe
for
maybe that's how they spell it in Greek. Wrong.
That's good enough for me. Oh, synopsis doesn't start with C unless Tamara spells it, and then it's amazing.
Well, go. Why don't you share with us your synopsis, Corinne.
The synopsis. Tula, played by Nia Vardalos, is self-described as having gone through an awkward phase from birth through age 30. That is, until she takes her destiny in her own hands, and she and her mom manipulate her dad, Gus, so that she can get some college education, as well as finally stop working in the family diner. When she meets the love of her life, Ian, played by John Corbett, who, isn't he the love of everyone's life? I mean, come on.
Right?
Yeah.
Except for the girl in, hold on. Serendipity. John Corbett was the rejection guy in Serendipity.
Yes.
Oh, the Sinai would fit in so well here, wouldn't it?
When she meets the love of her life, Ian, everything's coming up roses. That is, until her family finds out about her relationship. Because Ian isn't Greek.
What?
Oh, no!
But he could sure play one, you know, in any other movie. He could probably be cast as a Greek guy. Why not? Everybody else does it.
As the auntie says at the end, he even looks Greek.
Yeah.
Will Tula's dad ship her off to Greece and force her to join a Greek Orthodox nunnery? Will Ian demand that she leave her controlling family behind? Or will he show up as the man who will fight for her honor and try to make things work, showing that true love wins and have everything ultimately end in a big fat Greek wedding? That was for you.
Woo!
Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
Oh God, who sings that? Channeling a little.
Is God, it Satara?
Yes, Peter Satara. My foster mom used to fucking love Peter Satara, and we gave her so much shit for it. She's like, "Oh, I used to love Peter Satara," and we saw him and heard his music, and we're like, "Really? Oh yeah, you're Mormon. That makes sense."
Karate Kid all the way. That's Karate Kid mm-hmm. too. Yes. So before we start talking about a completely different movie franchise, Tamara, would you like to ding 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 dive into my big fat Greek wedding?
Oppa! Yes, I would. We open on a rainy Chicago morning. Tula and her father are going to open up the family restaurant, Dancing Zorba's, at the bright and early hour of 5 a.m. Actually, it's pretty fucking dark outside. Tula yawns and her father looks over disapprovingly and grumbles, "You better get married soon. You look so old."
Oh my God.
We hear Tula's voiceover as she explains that her father has been telling her that since she was 15. And we get a flashback, of little Tula in elementary school.
Aww.
She continues, "My whole life, I so wanted to fit in and be like the popular girls with their blonde hair and Wonder Bread sandwiches, but I was a swarthy 6-year-old with sideburns." One of the blondies in the cafeteria puts down her Wonder Bread sandwich to ask little Tula what she's eating. Tula pauses from opening the lid on her Tupperware and says, "Moussaka." Her classmate squeals with a mixture of delight and disgust. "Did you say moussaka?" And all her follow-along friends laugh, too. Tula tells us, "And things didn't get easier. That wasn't the only difference being Greek brought to me. I was expected to marry a nice Greek boy, have a bunch of Greek kids, and feed everyone till the day I died." We then see her years later. Her father is super proud of their heritage. And if you can't tell by him, you could look at their house, which is remodeled after the Parthenon, complete with statues of Greek gods and a Greek flag on the garage. Subtle. Tula explains that her dad thought only two things were true in the world. Greeks needed to teach everyone else who were non-Greeks about their culture, and every ailment from psoriasis to poison ivy could be cured with Windex. That is why Corinne said I could not get any better with Windex. Thank you. Best compliment of the week, Corinne. Mwah. We cut to Mr. Portocollis carpooling Tula and two of her classmates. He is lecturing to them about the root of every English word has Greek origins, like arachnophobia. Arachne meaning spider, and phobia is fear. So there you go, arachnophobia. Give me any word and I'll tell you the Greek root. One of Tula's classmates smartly offers, kimono? Mr. Portocollis thinks a moment and says, aha! That comes from the Greek word chimona, which means winter. And what do you put on in winter? A coat. So, kimono. While Tula and her schoolmates all roll their eyes, because that is a far fucking stretch, Mr. Portocollis, even for you.
For real. Let's just talk about how old Nia Vardalos looks in this, because I was looking at her particularly pre-makeover that she did on herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, pre-makeover, you and I look younger than she does. And
they put old makeup on her. They put some contour in her creases.
Okay, but she was in her 40s when she did this movie too. So
she was 40,
and she's supposed to be 30. So I was like, that makes a little more sense. But yeah, no, she looked like hot mess old, like before she did a little zhuzhing of her of her look.
I remember I was talking about this with my friend Gary, who's pretty particular about the people that he dates, but he was I guess he had watched this movie and he's like, wow, they really did a transformation on her. She looks so much better. I was like, yes, she did, Gary, but they were really trying hard to make her look bad with the frizzy hair and the unfortunate glasses, and I'm sure the contours in her creases.
I actually have like a specific note about her look. Yeah, wearing Golden Girls glasses from the 80s.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But didn't we all at one point in time, we had no choice. I had those glasses at a point.
Yeah.
They did not have skinny lenses. And if you have bad vision, guess what? You got a little Coke bottle action going on and it's not your fault.
Yeah, but that was in the 80s.
Oh, yes.
Not in
the
2000s.
Right. And even in this movie, though, I have to say, like, throughout the whole thing, makeover or not, like, the whole family on the female side, they all dress pretty matronly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, black chunky sandals with nylons and long skirts over like cardigan sweaters or under cardigan sweaters. I was just like, I don't know, maybe it's a Chicago thing. I'm just going to let it go because I am not Greek and I'm not going to try to judge the Greek people for what they wear because they do look comfortable. So there's that.
Very comfortable. Well, like the mom, it's so funny because the mom in this movie, she is wearing like a house dress most of the time. Mm-hmm. And like my next door neighbor, Francine, like when I was growing up, she was the parent of Michael and Michelle who lived next door to me. She wore those exact same like velveteen kind of house dress with like a zip down the middle sort of things. Yeah.
See, I channel that in a different way because I have that really cute long ribbed dress that I wear around the house that hugs me in all the right places.
Yeah.
And it's super comfortable. And I love it on a leather couch because my butt doesn't stick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's warm enough, like when it's kind of chilly. And it's cool enough when it's like on a warmer day. And I wore it over to Larry's aunt's house. And I guess I was being too fancy because we were doing laundry. So I just went over there in the dress I just like rump around in. And his aunt Tat was joking. And she goes, are you wearing a ball gown? Because it looks so good on me and it was long. And then his grandma, who's got a little touch of dementia, turned around. She goes, what? You're wearing a ball gown? Well, what'd you come over here and wear a ball gown to do laundry for?
Can you imagine being like so desperate with your laundry that the only thing you have left is like high-end formal wear, and so you're like literally wearing like spangles and
oh my god, a la Helen in fucking Bridesmaids where I turn around and my train takes 3 seconds to follow me as I pour the liquid detergent into the machine.
You're so glamorous. I love it when you do that.
Oh, God. No, it was comfortable. And I was like, well, I'm going to rethink what I wear next time I come over here. God damn, I thought I looked good, but I guess I look too good. Here comes Larry with her bougie girlfriend.
I am highly invested into cute, comfy wear.
Mm-hmm.
You have seen me in like the little shorts and the little matching tank top you have seen me in, like the cute little long johns with like the lemon print on it. And then I regularly podcast in the red fuzzy onesie.
In the red fuzzy onesies that makes you look like you should be in a Lizzo video, goddammit.
Bam, 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 bam. Thank you, Lizzo, for your red fuzzy onesie. If you want to send more my way, I will accept.
Oh my God. We pulled a fucking Brandy and Kristen and went on a little bit of a tangent. Back to the show.
Back to
the movie at hand. Damn it. Which brings us back to present day, where Tula is opening the blinds to the restaurant windows. Her voiceover finishes, because nice Greek girls who aren't married work at their family's restaurants. And then, slowly but surely, her family begins to file in. First, her aunt Vula and her mother Maria come in. Mom comments, "Tula, you closed last night and here opening?" To which she shrugs and admits, "I have no life." Vula immediately goes to her husband, Taki, who's at a booth with Tula's father, Gus, and scolds him for not waiting for her. But they had important man stuff to discuss, like how they can ship Tula off to Greece to find a nice Greek boy to marry.
I wasn't that far off with my Catholic nunnery comment.
Oh, my God. I know. Fuck right off. God. Seriously? Oh, that hurt my heart.
Yeah.
Oh. But, Gus confides disappointedly, she don't want to go. She don't want to go! Taki and Vula gasp and all make the sign of the cross over their chests. The horror. Next, her sister Athena and her kids storm in. She's slightly flavored.
I'm a little cherry flavored. Personally, what flavor are you?
I don't know. I was trying to think of a Greek flavor. I'm a little baklava flavored.
Ooh, you got a little honey action going on.
Mm-hmm. She is slightly favored because she married young and became a baby-making machine. Her three boys run behind the counter to tackle their favorite Uncle Nico, Tula's brother, whose only role in life is to cook food and marry a Greek virgin. But he's got all the time in the world because he's a man, unlike Tula, whose clock began ticking in her preteens.
Mm-hmm.
Then cousins Nikki and Angelo, played by Joey Fatone. I didn't see who Nikki was. Who is Nikki?
Oh, Nikki is played by Gia Carides, who played Liz in the Strictly Ballroom movie. And she is perfection in both movies. And she also dresses hella sexy in My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Yeah, she does.
In opposition to a lot of the other women who are...
You're right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, her girls are always up and at attention. Mm-hmm. They sure are. Mm-hmm. But they enter arguing about who works harder. They're Taki and Vula's kids and beeline it over to the booth. Even though they bicker relentlessly, you can tell that the Portokalis family is tight, full of love, and have each other's back, in spite of the volume. Which is why Tula hears Taki and Vula explain loudly to Gus that if Tula doesn't marry, she will stay with Gus forever and run the restaurant. She will never leave you. Just then, Athena makes a hasty exit to do all the very important mom things that she has to do, but as she hurries out, she knocks over a stack of menus, and amongst them is a pamphlet for the local city college. She shakes it accusingly in front of her sister and asks, "What's this, Tula? Huh? What is this?" But Tula feigns ignorance, so Athena throws it into a nearby trash bin.
How? Education? What is that? Oh my gosh!
Oh, I wish you were joking, but you're not.
I'm not.
You're not. Don't be smart. Go get married and have lots of babies.
Oh, thank you. I was waiting for that guidance. You know my heart, my baby-making heart.
It's not your heart that has to make the babies, I hate to tell you. I don't know if you missed sex ed, but
what?
It comes out slightly lower. A little south.
Oh. That explains a lot of things. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A short while later, Tula takes the trash out to the alley and she fishes the pamphlet back out, sits down and thumbs through it. Her voiceover is back and she ponders, "I wish I had a different life where I was prettier or braver, because right now it feels like nothing changes." Tula goes back inside the restaurant and as she is handing a customer a menu, she sees him walking into the restaurant in slow-mo. The mystery man is Ian, played by John Corbett.
Wee, boop, 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 boop. If you don't know what that sound is coming from Corinne, please go back and listen to our Serendipity episode.
But Tula doesn't know that yet. And she's confused because she's not used to hearing the Shania and the Greek restaurant in her head. But somehow, somehow it works.
It works.
She just knows she likey what she sees. So do I. So do I, Tula. So do I.
Mm-hmm.
He's there with his colleague Mike for breakfast, and Tula is entranced as she watches Mike pass a slew of photos to Ian in an attempt to set him up with one of his lady friends. Ian isn't interested because all the girls Mike has introduced him to are all the same. They finally notice Tula, who is standing at their table, silently, with a pot of coffee, staring at Ian. Creepy. There is a long, awkward pause before Mike eyes her critically and says, "Hi." She snaps out of her Ian reverie. "Hi. sorry, my brain stopped. One of those days. Here I am standing here, your own private Greek statue." Ian lolls at this end, and huge hearts pop into Tula's eyes. She tries to scurry away, but Mike calls her back, waving his cup, and asks for more coffee. She says, "Of course," but instead of filling his cup, she goes straight to Ian's cup, fills his, and then hurries away to hide behind the cash register and continue to stare at Ian like Joe from the Netflix/stalker murder series You.
Mm.
Mike is slightly put off, but he's got no time to complain. He's got a pop quiz to give his class. And we learn these two are teachers at a nearby school. Mike approaches the register, looking at Tula crouched halfway down behind it, shakes his head and slaps a few bills onto the counter, saying, "Keep the change."
That would be just super embarrassing if I was trying to disappear from a guy that I was crushing on and his friend was like, "Hey, you down there behind the counter, here's the money I owe you." I'm like, "Damn it, I thought I was invisible. Shit."
I think that they just need to take a cue from Mars with the cartoon black hole pop into.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God, what I wouldn't pay to have one of those. A cartoon hole to jump into.
Can you imagine, like, your boss is looking for you and you're like, you hear his feet step up the stairs, mm-hmm. and you're like, whoop, whoop.
But do you get to take the hole with you when you go into it? Because they're going to see the hole there and be like, "Tammy, get out of that goddamn hole."
Now I'm just like thinking about like the fourth dimension and like,
yeah. Well, where
sealing
does the
up
hole
the
go?
Hole behind you and then plooping it out and then
yeah.
reappearing in amazing places. That would behoove you and just be like, you move down to like the boss's office and you'd be like, "I was just waiting for you here. What yeah. is going on? I thought we were supposed
pay
to
no
meet."
Pay no attention to that hole in the corner. I think you should really invent that, Corinne. Go on ahead.
Oh my God. If I could invent that, then we would just be porting over to each other's right. places all the time and it would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Surprise, it's not on the market right now.
I'm telling you, they saw the movie The Fly with Jeff Goldblum and they were like, bad idea.
Yeah. Don't even, I still, that movie burned into my brain. Mm-hmm. I was like 8 when I saw it and I was like, oh, I don't want a teleport machine.
Yeah. So after they figure out nobody wants a teleport machine because of the badness that can happen therein. Unless they look at Star Trek, but we're just going to ignore that. Later that night, Gus is in the restaurant basement keeping the books when his son Nico tentatively puts down a new menu he drew on the desk. The cover is great, encircled by a grapevine border. The background is a view of Greece as if looking down from Mount Olympus. And the foreground has a fantastic drawing of Gus, his dad, presenting the restaurant title, Dancing Zorbas.
And that's a great likeness, too.
I know. It was a fantastic little caricature of him, I gotta mm-hmm. say. And Nico asks his pop what he thinks, but Gus is not a fan. He actually doesn't even really look at it. And
no.
He waves it away.
He blatantly does not look at it.
I was like, that broke my heart.
Mm-hmm. But guess what? He doesn't have to get married tomorrow or yesterday or when he was 15. So there's that.
And when he said, when his family asks him, "Where have you been?" He's like, "I've been out." And they're like, "Okay, do you need your laundry done?"
Yeah, seriously. Oh.
Nico passes his sister Tula in the hallway and pats her on the shoulder, wishing her luck on whatever endeavor she's going to propose. And she has a doozy. She stands between her father and mother and tells her dad, okay, she's a 30-year-old. A 30-year-old asking for permission to go to motherfucking college.
I know. You don't have to tell me. I saw the movie, too. I'm right there with you. The rage is a-bubbling. The rage is a-bubbling. But I also know when you have family with their expectations that you've grown up with, how hard it is to go against their wishes and words. And, yeah, especially when her dad does this next part.
Ugh. So she tells her dad that there's been unnecessary ordering in the restaurant, and she thought that if they get a computer, she could help with that. Her dad does not even glance at her, but her mother is listening carefully. So, Tula continues, if you remember, I got good grades with computers in school, but there's a lot more to learn. So I thought, she fishes the pamphlet out of her pocket, I could take some classes at the community college. She now has her dad's full attention. He looks at her stoically, then wails. Why do you want to leave me? She assures him, Dad, I'm not leaving you. But don't you want me to do something with my life? Dad is adamant. Yes, get married, make babies, but you look so old.
Oh, my God.
He throws his hands up and leaves in a huff. Tula sinks down into his chair and begins crying, and her mom comes over and comforts her. She knows Tula has passion. She gets it from her side and assures her that she will talk to Gus. Tula is unconvinced. Her dad is stubborn, and she mimics him. The man is the head of the household. Mom agrees with a sly smile, but informs her daughter that the man is the head, but the woman is the neck. And the neck can turn the head any way it wants. Cut to Maria and Gus arguing in the bedroom about Tula and school. Gus thinks she's gonna get taken advantage of, but Maria assures him Tula is smart. Somebody's gonna give her a bag of drugs.
She's not gonna take the drugs, Gus. No, but they'll say, take the bag over here and she'll do it. God, do you think your daughter's an idiot?
She's 30 motherfucking years old.
Maybe if you let her out of the house every once in a while, she might not be so gullible.
Seriously. Maria assures him Tula is smart. Gus agrees. So why go to school? She's smart enough for a girl. That last bit does it, and Maria lays into him hard and heavy and gives him a verbal lashing. Oh, so you're saying with all I do, including running the restaurant and raising 3 kids, you're smarter than me? It's lucky for me that I have you to tie my shoes. Then she leaves in a huff.
In a huff!
Yes! And triumphantly passes Tula in the hallway with some serious swagger, because she knows she's won. She's worked that situation perfectly.
That is still a goddamn quote that I remember. There's few quotes that I remember from movies, but that the man is the head of the household, but the woman is the neck, and the neck can turn the head any way she wants. I was like, oh, yes, girl. Not an ideal situation. Your heritage kind of confines you, but you make the most out of that moussaka.
I just loved it when Mom put the zinger in of, thank goodness I have you to tie my shoes. I was like,
Yes. That was one of the first times that she's like, oh, yeah, my husband thinks he's in control, but we play him like a fiddle.
Or a mandolin.
He doesn't even know. Yeah. I was like... Mom thinks she won. And she did, because next we see Tula happily walking out of the college on registration day. And since things are a-changing, she decides to give herself a full makeover, and we get a montage of Tula 2.0. She ditches her unfortunate glasses for contacts, starts wearing makeup, participates in class discussions, and one day in the lunch hall, she works up the courage to sit with a group of students who look eerily like grown-up versions of the kids who teased her when she was a swarthy 6-year-old eating moose caca. But this time, They accept her, and she pulls out her Wonder Bread sandwich and eats with her new friends.
Yay!
Then, while perusing a bulletin board, Tula sees a flyer for a course on computers and tourism and realizes, oh, this could be her next step. She goes straight to her Aunt Vula's Mount Olympus travel agency and tells her about the course and how she can double her aunt's revenue so she can spend more time with her husband. And Vula emphatically agrees. That is a good idea. But there's just one problem. Gus. The ladies, Tula, Maria, and Vula, hatch a plan on the way to the restaurant. They will trick Gus into thinking Tula going to the travel agency is his idea.
Ooh.
And now, since it's been so long, we are bringing back a new installment of ODK Theater, Corinne Q Mouth Horn. Nice. It's been a long time. Corinne, I will play the parts of Maria, and you need to do all the heavy lifting with Vula. Picture an acting student in their first class doing a very bad impression of a clueless aunt who's not at all in on the scheme. And I'm going to pick on you to make you also do Gus so you can say some sexist things, because I know you love it so, and are a huge fan of doing accents.
Yay.
Let's set the scene, shall we?
Okay, governor.
Okay, governor. We are in Dancing Zorba's restaurant, and the stakes are high. Tula's happiness is on the line, and it's all in the hands of her aunts. Vula sits across a booth from Gus and Maria. Maria asks, so Vula, how is business?
Oh, woe is to me. Business is bad. Gus says, I don't understand what's happening. Do you need money?
No. She just means with the two businesses, she suffers.
She suffers?
She suffers. She has to be at the travel agency alone all day because everyone else needs to be working at the big dry cleaning store.
That's right. I make Taki go to the dry cleaning store, so now I have no time with him.
Just then, Tula arrives at the table and pours the slowest cup of coffee on the planet to hear how the plan is hashing out.
Gus says, so send Angelo or Nikki to the travel agency and you can be at the dry cleaner with Taki.
Vula blinks a couple of times before stammering.
Yeah, that would be good.
That would be no good. No good, because Angelo or Nikki, they don't know how to use the computer.
That's why that no work. Gus says, no work? Computer?
He slaps his hand on the table. Oh, you're going to slap your hand on the table. That's better. That works better.
I just slapped my hand on the table.
Wow. Yeah. That's great acting right there.
Thank you. It was a very, method moment, I have to say. I have your answer. Send Tula to the travel agency and send Nikki to work here at the restaurant. Vula says, I can't believe it.
Oh, Gus, you're so wonderful.
Oh, Gus, bravo. Gus says, you'll see a man.
And points at his head, the top one, because he's so smart. And Tula twirls away triumphantly. And that concludes this segment of ODK Theater.
Oh, that's amazing.
Next, we're at the travel agency. Tula's been there for a while, obviously, and is thriving.
Yay.
She really has a knack for the business. Could things get any better? Yes, they can. She is bounding around her office, filing and taking care of business when she sees Dreamy Ian, her crush from the restaurant, buying a falafel at the cart outside her work window, and he notices her. Not only that, but he smiles at her. She's so taken aback that she gives him the stink eye. She doesn't really give him the stink eye, but she looks at him like, what the fuck are you looking at?
And yeah.
It looks like the stink eye. A stranger next to Ian asks for the time, and when he's looking down at his watch, Tula does what she does best and does a disappearing act behind the water cooler. He looks back, but she's nowhere to be seen. He thinks that she left and heads off on his merry way.
But he's back the next day. Ian does a few preliminary passes in front of the window of the travel agency until he gets her attention. She smiles shyly at him, and he knows she's interested. So he's got to pull out the big guns. He motions to Tula to wait a second, then rushes out of sight, only to do the disappearing staircase in front of the window. Inside, Tula's phone rings, and she almost doesn't see Ian accidentally run into a very short elderly woman while on his imaginary staircase. She thwacks the shit out of him with her purse. Been ready. Once he breaks away from the geriatric abuse, he goes inside, and he and Tula make eyes at each other before she asks if he wants to see some brochures. She quickly gets up, forgets she has her headset on, and promptly gets ricocheted back and falls straight on her back, because headsets, you see, used to be connected by wires instead of Bluetooth.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I was like, what the hell is that thing anchored to? The desk?
The desk, yes. Cut to the two of them sitting behind her desk, laughing at their very clumsy meet cute. He teases her about eating shit on the floor. Eating shit. That sounds like eating shit, but it means just like falling down. And she asks, well, hey, where'd that mark on your face come from? He replies, you don't want to know, in an effort to sound tough. And she nonchalantly mentions, I don't know, if I survived an old lady attack, I'd be bragging about it. They both chuckle. He asks if she'd like to have dinner with him, and she quickly accepts. Oh yeah, you know, if John Corbett be asking me out to dinner, I'd be like, hello, yes, please. Yes.
You'd probably get to, do you want to? Yes. No, I just was going to ask if you want to go, yes. Would you like to go get some? Yes. You want to go get some dinner with me? Yes, 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 yes. I said yes already. Yes, yes.
So next we see them having that dinner at a, I would say, inappropriate first date place, but, you know, whatever.
Why?
They're at, like, the swankiest restaurant ever.
He's trying to make an impression. Oh, let the man do what he want to do.
He's making an impression, all right. He is doing most of the talking. He is pre-law, but then decided being a lawyer wasn't for him, so he changed his major, and his family was none too happy. Tula is impressed and quietly says, I think it takes a pretty strong person to do that. He smiles and jokes. So now you know everything about me. I'm a pretty strong vegetarian teacher. But I don't know anything about you except that you're Greek. He has a revelation. Hey, I can take you to a Greek restaurant. I know this great place right by where you work. You probably know it. It's something Zorba's? Tula shakes her head slightly. Starts rocking in the corner. Well, she would if she weren't trying to keep it together for the hotness that is in front of her. I don't want to go there, she says softly, leaving Ian confused. So she explains, that restaurant, Dancing Zorba's, my family owns it. His eyes glimmer with sudden recognition. It's you. You're that waitress. Her face falls and she tells him almost apologetically, well, I was going through a frump girl phase that lasted well up until now. He shakes his head and says with hearts in his eyes, I don't know about frump girl, but I remember you. Okay, no Greek. Then how about Italian tomorrow night? And she agrees. The next
already
night.
Already a second date the next night? John Corbett moving fast.
Mm-hmm.
Go Ian. Go, go Ian. Ian.
Go Ian. It's your birthday. Getting nookie. Not yet. But we'll come. The next night, they have a lovely dinner out on a restaurant patio and then take a walk by the marina. Ian tells her a story about taking a camping trip with his family and how he spent the summer alone with them. Tula cannot comprehend this. Don't all your cousins come with you? She asks. He chuckles a bit confused. No, I only have like two and they live in Wisconsin. She looks baffled. So he asks what her family is like. She hesitates. He prompts her again. What about Christmas? What's Christmas like? She flannily. She flannily blurts out.
Flannily.
Okay, it's chaos. My mom cooks lamb and my dad and uncles fight over the lamb brain while my Aunt Vula chases me around with the lamb eye, trying to make me eat it because it will make me smart. I have 27 first cousins, and that's just first cousins, and we're always together and loud and in each other's business, and nobody in my family has ever dated a non-Greek because we only marry Greek people to breed more Greeks, and you're wonderful, but I just don't know how this is going to work. Ian's undeterred. Hey, it's not like we're a different species. We're both people, and you have a crazy family. Who doesn't? But you want to know something? My life was boring before I met you. You're interesting, funny, and beautiful, and I just want to spend some time with you. She looks intoxicated by his response and asks, you think I'm beautiful? He answers her with a kiss and then a husky yes. And then we get a montage of them kissing good night during their next few dates, and those kisses are not dry. No, ma'am.
No. No.
Mm-mm. They get deep and long and luscious with each other, and each is more frantic and passionate than the last. They are saying, hey, let's have sex, but with our mouths and just up top, above the neck.
For now.
As if they hate to break away their lips from each other. Oof. And I'm thinking, she's probably 30 and a virgin.
Yeah.
And
no.
He's probably like, I've usually, like, well done banged by this point in the dating relationship. Oh, yeah. What the heck?
She's like, this lady is passionate. They, like, really channeled my teen years. And I was, like, making out hard and heavy in a car because you can't go all the way. So you're just going to get as far as you can. Like, reaching your hand through the mailbox, feeling around. Okay. And then pulling it back out. Why I said the mailbox, I have no idea.
I didn't get the memo about not going all the way, so.
Oh, yeah. See, well, if you don't have a place to go and you don't want to get caught having sex in the car by cops.
I'm like, there's the car, nature, you know, just all sorts of.
Okay, Rebel. Okay. Yes. Back in the day, more experience than me. It's established. Corinne had no fucks to give it came to sex.
Or maybe a few too many fucks to give.
Yes. Sorry, you're right. Sorry. Some time passes and we next see Tula and Ian at the Mount Olympus travel agency. She's trying to work, but he is busy canoodling with her and trying to get some sexy time action in before he leaves. They're in the middle of a kiss when Nikki bursts in. She tells Tula... What? We'll find out after this break. If you couldn't tell, that was me doing the fade-out music. Yes. Beautiful. And we're back. They're in the middle of a kiss when Nikki bursts in and tells Tula the family knows, as if she's a mobster in organized crime. Tula sheepishly tells Ian, this is my cousin Nikki. And he's thrilled. He walks over to shake hands and says, oh, I'm so happy to finally meet a member of Tula's family. Nikki does a weird chest flex in his direction, cocks her head to the side, saying, I'm the least of your worries. Nikki explains that a family friend saw them sucking face in the Denny's parking lot and told her mom, who told Tula's mom, in a fucked up game of Greek telephone.
Ooh.
Next, we see Tula sitting at the dining room table next to her mom. There's yelling in the next room, and it's Gus, who's giving Ian an earful for not asking his permission to date his daughter. Ian apologizes, but reminds Gus that Tula's 30 years old. The elderly gentleman is unyielding, so Ian very humbly asks, can I please date your daughter, sir? Gus stares at him intensely before responding, no! Ian leaves to the dining room, tells Tula goodbye, that he'll see her tomorrow, pointedly tells her, I'll see you tomorrow, in front of both of her parents. And once he's gone, Gus looks at Maria and chastises her. See what I told you? This is what happened when you educate women. Now we got a boyfriend in the house. Is he a nice Greek boy? No, he's a Xeno with the long Xeno hair on top of his head. God!
And for the second time, Gus leaves in a huff.
Okay, Gus is just jealous because he's got his hair like artfully arranged for Jesus. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sprayed into a spiral and it's trying really hard. And he looks at John Corbett and he's like,
oh, that luscious hair. It should not belong to a Zeno. It should only belong to a Greek like me.
He better not have an adult sleepover because he might wake up bald. And I will have a nice new hairpiece.
Oh my God, did I send you the thing about the real doll?
Oh my God, you told me you were looking at the real doll website and that the guys looked like
serial killers. Yes. The women are like,
I am sexy.
You know, and some of them look so realistic and like they all are like sultry and like sumptuous looking. And then the guys are like these kind of like gaunt, pasty serial killer looking guys. And it's sort of like, what?
And now I'm going to have to go look. I didn't want to, but you're making me go look. I was fine with leaving Lars and the real girl in our last episode and the real girl dolls, but now I have to go explore.
Oh.
Maria then tells Tula that she might be having a romance, but it ends now. Tula looks at her mother seriously and admits, but I love him. To which Maria exclaims, oh, Tula, eat something. Because food is always the answer.
Obviously.
Then we get a barrage of familial setups. Oof. Tula is setting the table one night for dinner and realizes there's an extra plate. Maria informs her that her father has a friend, quote-unquote, coming over. Ugh. The friend, if you ask Gus, is a nice Greek boy. But to the common layperson, this friend is a middle-aged balding man in a polyester suit who constantly mops his forehead with his cloth napkin before blowing his nose in it. Hot.
Can we talk about how grateful we are that the trend now is for men to just shave their heads when they get to a certain point in the I don't have hair scheme of things?
Right. Don't hold on to that shit. Just let it go. Just let it go. And be okay with it. The men in this montage, a few of them have like the receding hairline and they are holding on to the little halos of hair that are surrounding the backs of their heads. And it is not cute. Next, it's another night and we see a swarthy man with a healthy appetite whose eyebrows rival Bert from Sesame Street. Oof. Then there's another polyester suit attached to a man who looks to be in his late 40s and early 50s. Oof. He is mustachioed, full of gold rings, and seems to be more interested in grooming his mustache than interacting with Tula. And lastly, there is a lecherous, greasy-haired man in a gold silk shirt that sees fit to stare at Tula intensely while suggestively licking his spoon. Gross. I mean, he's practically tonguing it 2 inches from her face.
Ugh.
She justifiably excuses herself from the table for that one, but the whole time her parents are trying to set her up, she's still seeing Ian on the sly. One night they go to his apartment and she's surprised that they wound up there. He asks if she wants to go up and she agrees. We see them through the windows walking up the stairs, and when they finally get to his apartment, Tula essentially jumps his fucking bones and rips his shirt off.
Yeah, she pounces.
Yeah, she pounces. She literally pounces. You go, girl. And I imagine she's not a nice Greek virgin girl after this evening.
I think you are right.
And since meeting the Portocolis family went so well, that's sarcasm, Ian and Tula decide to meet his family.
The Millers.
The Millers. The experience is much different. And I'm like, I wonder if that's how like you feel when you go to my house. Because they're like sitting around and it's just like very quiet. Yeah. There's like nothing else really going on. It's just very subdued.
That's the sad thing. Like my family hasn't been big, loud, and boisterous for a really long time. Uh-huh. Like everybody hates everybody at this point or somebody's got beef with somebody else or they don't ever just want to be in the same room together like they were when my grandmother was alive.
Yeah.
But the Portocolis family really reminded me of my sister's ex-in-laws when she was married to Junior because they constantly had 20 to 30 people anywhere Yeah. I think I talked about the one time we went to their house for Christmas and they didn't do the Secret Santa thing. So everybody was trying to buy presents for everybody else. And it was a fairly large, like 2,500 square foot house. Uh-huh. And they had this huge room in the entryway where the tree was. And the room was literally packed from one end to the other with presents because bought everybody else something. And it was just, it was a sight to behold. And they never did it again after that because they're like, yeah, we're all picking people to buy for.
Yeah, that seems smart. Well, and also, but like, you know, when we went to Eva's birthday party, it was a pretty lively kind of event.
But it wasn't family. It was her friends and yeah. And her brother didn't even show up. Emilio wasn't even there.
I know.
Oh. And her mom and dad didn't come. So
what are you
it's
talking
like,
about? It wasn't family. I was there.
You know what I mean? Like the family's kind of like, yeah. It's kind of chipped away and fractured and it's really sad, but it sometimes happens as people get older.
Yeah. Very much like my family. Quite.
You're the Millers.
Yes, we are. My family is the Millers. Ian's family is significantly smaller and they share a nice intimate dinner where they pepper Tula with questions about her heritage. Tula is not a name you hear every day, Ian's mom comments. Does it mean something in your language? Tula says, yes, it's short for Fortula, which means light of God. And I was like, oh, that's really nice. And the mom was like, blink, 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 blink.
Yeah. Do you know what your name means, Corinne?
Yes, yes, I do.
Well?
Womp, 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 womp.
Is that a literal translation?
It's what my heart does every time I hear the translation of what my name means. It means maiden.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus. I think I get sad because I think my people used to call me Tammy. Tammy means like beautiful or something like that. And then Tamara, which is my real name, means goddess of the palm.
Ooh.
Yes, Corinne is doing a lovely rendition of one of those blow up doll men that wave around in the sky in front of Carlots.
Dancing in the wind.
Oh, she's being a very lively palm dancing in the wind.
You're always a goddess in my heart, Tamara.
Thanks, maiden.
Whoa.
That's so just not fitting.
Oh, it isn't. It really isn't. So our names don't have the religious connotations that Fortula's does. And the religious connotations seem to be a little too much for the mom. So she changes the subject and asks her husband, didn't you have a Greek receptionist once? Ian's father looks up at the ceiling as if an answer will magically appear there. But he doesn't think she was Greek. Was she Armenian? No. Was she Guatemalan? That's close to Greece, right? Tula feels a little bit awkward about the racial confusion, but the dinner goes well enough.
She doesn't get offended that they think Guatemala is by Greece. Oh, no. They thought Armenian
they
was
thought
close
Armenia
to Greece.
Was like Greece. Yeah.
And Guatemalan was what the receptionist actually was, which is completely fucking a different continent.
And very much, you know, like I'm always getting people from Greek and Guatemala confused. For one, it starts with a G.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Super confusing.
I know.
It's their own fault for doing that.
Yeah. Oh, the whiteness of it all. My parents, bless their hearts, spent the evening grilling my cousin's then Chinese fiance. Who's Chinese, on how to pronounce her name. I kid you not, after having to repeat her name multiple times, while my aunt, who is Mongolian, corrected our pronunciation, the family chanted it over and over and over again.
What?
Yes.
What? When was this?
Oh, several years ago, and my heart was dying inside as this was happening. Me and my sister were like, no, 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 no.
Can I ask what the name they chanted was?
I can't. You know what? Honestly, I can't remember because I will tell you that literally the next time we saw her, she had an American name. So she goes by Julie now.
Yeah.
Or maybe she just said that so they stopped chanting at her.
Well, that was the thing. She was like, this is a shit show. Oh my gosh. Mm. This is the worst. Talk about othering a person. And yeah, no, forget about it. I'm just going to pick an American name. Oh, so bad. So, love you, Julie. You're awesome. She is. She's fantastic. And she and my cousin, Alexander, are married. And their relationship survived the cringeworthy dinner that my parents had at their house. But I'm sure that Julie is forever traumatized. That night, back at Ian's house, the couple is laying in bed, postcoital. Ian quietly says, I love you. Tula answers, I love you too. He sits up a little bit more so he can see her face and seriously says, I don't know how to say this. She gets a panicked look on her face. This is it, her expression says. He realizes they're too different to make it work. She's ugly, and she wasn't what he's wanted all along. But no, he shakes his head as if to conjure up the strength and asks, will you marry me? She is fucking thrilled and tells him emphatically, yes! They kiss, and he hands her a ring. Cut to the Portocolis house, where Gus is sitting in a dark room. Maria comes and shakes her hands at him. Stop! Just stop! They love each other. She turns on the lights. Gus cries, how could she do this to me? Because it's all about you, Gus. Is he a good boy? I don't know. Is he from a good family? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe if you had been inviting him over to dinner instead of the horrible suitors that you had, you would know.
Yeah, I can't believe that they fucking invited that sexual predator over Ian to fucking try to woo Tula with his tongue and a spoon.
La, la, la. Nope, 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 nope.
What's your name? Tula la 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 la.
Maria tells him to calm down and informs him that Tula didn't do anything to you. They fell in love, and that sometimes happens, and now you just have to accept it. The next day, Tula goes to Ian's school and calls him out of his class. Dude, time and place, Tula. Time and
seriously.
Place.
I know. How did she even get on the fucking
campus, right? Like,
yeah.
Have some ouzo, wait a few hours, and then, yeah, no, wait until
it
school's
was,
out.
When was this movie made? Because there's been way too many, like, school shootings for that to ever happen nowadays. Sadly, that's nothing to laugh about.
Yeah. He leaves his classroom telling them to behave, and in the hallway she pleads with him to elope. Let's go to Fiji or Vegas, she suggests. He says, okay, and she tries to lead him away mid-school day. He asks, what's going on? And she explains that she's so happy with him, but her family is upset because she's not getting married in her church. Ian just wants to make her happy, and since he's not religious, he offers to get baptized as a Greek Orthodox. I would do anything for love. And I will do that.
Oh.
Next, we see Ian at Dancing Zorba's attempting to make good with Greece, with Gus.
Go, Greece lightning, no, Greece lightning, go.
Greece lightning, go. Go, Greece lightning. Ian's at a booth, and Maria and Tula are pleading with Gus to go talk. He eventually does and looms over Ian, telling him, it's your lucky day to be baptized in the Greek Orthodox Church. Nikki will be your godmother.
Mm-hmm. Hey there, sexy.
Ian glances underneath Gus's arm and spies Nikki with her big hair and her, like, short little bodice action going on, adjusting her boobs. Yeah, seems fitting. Seems
for a godmother, yeah. That's who I'd want for my godmother.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we see Ian getting baptized in an ornate Greek Orthodox church, standing in an inflatable kiddie pool, wearing nothing but a pair of running shorts. Nikki is anointing him with oil by rubbing it all over his beautiful chest.
I'm surprised Tula's like, no, girl, that's mine. No, you're just spending a little too much time there on the pecs. Too much time, Nikki.
Oh. The priest says a bunch of Greek chants behind him and dunks Ian in the water once, twice, thrice. Tula's immediate family are in the pews, and her brother Nikki turns to her and whispers, "See, this isn't so bad." To which Tula sighs and says, "Yes, it is." Ugh, he's so going to look up at any moment. And he has been looking up, clearing his hair from his eyes and like staring over at Tula with like hearts beep, 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 beep. And a smile on his face like, "I'm doing this for you, baby." Yes, it's so sweet. Oh, when you know he does not give one singular shit about being Greek Orthodox.
Mm-mm.
But Tula doesn't see that. She thinks he's going to look up at any moment and say, "Oh, yeah, you're so not worth it." Her brother looks at her seriously and says, "Yes, you are." And I got a little verklempt over that. I got a little like,
I know, they have just the cutest relationship, yes. Her and her brother. God. Ugh. He's like in a small teeny part of this, and he like picks on the other cousins and sisters, but him and Tula love each other.
Uh-huh. And they like look out for each other, too. They got each other's sure backs.
Do. Yes.
Oh.
And Tula's brother is easy on the eyes. Like,
mm-hmm. Yes.
He looks like a nice Greek boy.
Too bad I am not a Greek woman. And
definitely not a virgin.
Nor would I want to be pumping out the children. Well, particularly at this age. But if I was younger, I might be like, well, okay, I'll do like one or two. But like, no.
Yeah.
Tula chuckles and playfully chucks him in the shoulder with her own. Once the ceremony is over, Ian goes to put his clothes back on. What? He doesn't want to hang out in his short running shorts? But why?
Because he's all oily. He'll probably slide right across that goddamn freaking stone floor.
I hope he brought some, like, disposable clothes with him, because that oil is never coming out. Ugh.
No.
Tula finds him there. Tula finds him where?
I don't know. I didn't know what to call that place in the back of the church. The pewry? The priest? The kinnihunish?
The behedimidish.
Just make, that's what it is. The orthodoxizationist? Yeah.
Tula finds him in a room behind the sanctuary and hugs his oily head and thanks him profusely for doing this. He's made her family very happy, or as happy as they can be under the circumstances.
Some time passes, and next we see it's Easter Sunday at Dancing Zorba's. Ian's there to celebrate / get introduced to Tula's extended family. She's giving him some pointers before everyone arrives. Like, instead of saying Happy Easter, try saying Christoinasti. They practice it a few times until Ian's semi-intelligible, and just in time for Gus, who's bringing a big pot of food into the dining room. Ian cheerily says, "Gus, Christoinasti," to which Gus grumbles in Greek, "My people were learning philosophy when yours were still swinging in the trees." We don't understand this, but thank you, closed captions. Tula understands this, but lies and tells Ian, "He likes you." Then the rest of the family descends on the restaurant. Tula and Ian stand close to the door as 25 to 30 relatives squeeze in front of them. At the helm is Thea Vula, who shakes her hand in front of the couple for emphasis and explains, "Tula, we never thought you'd get married. Didn't I say that, Taki?" To which Taki nods emphatically and agrees, "Yes, we never thought we'd see the day." There's an awkward pause before Vula asks, "So, is this Ian?" Tula apologizes and confirms, yes, sorry, everyone, this is Ian." And the crowd of relatives simultaneously shout, "Ian!" And they all crowd around him and shove Tula to the back while they pepper him with kisses on the cheeks and introductions.
I know. He's like treated like a pop star. Like,
yes. Poor Tula.
I'm surprised they don't like when they part. He's not like naked or, you know, wearing ripped clothing.
Or on everybody's shoulders as he crowd surfs across the restaurant.
Yes.
Later, the party's in full swing when Ian gets approached by Tula's brother, Nick. At first, he's being polite, asking how Ian likes the dancing and the party. Ian tells him he likes it all very much, and then Nick switches gears and whispers, "If you ever hurt my sister, I'll kill you." Ian's face falls, and Nick starts chuckling and assures him, "Oh, come on, oh, Ian, hey, look at your face. I was just kidding, lighten up."
Uh-huh.
Ian looks dubious and terrified before Nick lowers his brow and nods, "Yeah, I'll lighten you up when I take out your kidney. I got a gun in my pocket. I'm not afraid to use it." Ian looks like he wants to back away. But Nick slaps him playfully on the chest and says, "We're just kidding around, aren't we, Angelo?" Cousin Angelo, who's a short distance away, turns around and without missing a beat says, "Hey, Ian, we're gonna kill ya."
Great.
Then Nick leans in and simultaneously shakes and nods his head at that statement. A little later, across the room, Tula and Ian have a moment to themselves and are checking in amidst the enthusiastic Greek dancing that's occurring throughout the restaurant. Vula makes her way over to the couple and asks, "Ian, may I touch your hair?" He graciously allows her to, and then she runs her fingers through it and gets a faraway look at her eyes. "Oh, my Taki used to have hair like this," it says. I'm just kidding. I don't know if that's what it says, but that's what I saw in it.
"I remember the day when he had the luscious, luscious hair. But now, no longer. You don't mind just close your eyes? I do a little zoot, make a little wink, wink."
But Tula has her hands entwined into Ian's hair a little bit too long before Tula has to snap her back to reality. "Tia!" Then Vula offers, "When are you going to come to my house so I can cook for you?" Tula gingerly tells her that that might be a problem because Ian is a vegetarian. Vula does not understand this word, and Tula explains he doesn't eat meat. So she repeats, "Doesn't eat meat! Don't eat no meat!" with escalating volume till the music stops and the whole family turns around to watch, Vula practically shouting at the non-meat eater. After a moment of silence, she smiles and offers, "Ah, that's okay. I'll make you lamb." And then joins the festivities and the music starts up again.
That's like the only line that I remember from watching this movie when it was out in the theaters was,
"Yeah,
oh, he's a vegetarian. No problem. I'll make you lamb."
Like, that's like something so my family would say. "Oh, you don't like meat? I'll make you chorizo and eggs." Chorizo has meat in it.
Since Tula and Ian are engaged, they've got to make the rounds to Ian's family as well. The foursome sits quietly across from each other, very subdued, on matching couches at Ian's parents' house. Tula is in awe of the quiet because she doesn't get a lot of that around her fam. Ian and Tula let his parents know that they kind of have a date set for, which they don't. They're like, mid-October, early November. That's not having a date set. That's kind of just like a general time range on. And his mother generously offers, "I'll check to see if the country club is available." But much to the surprise of Ian's parents, they inform them that they're getting married in the Greek Orthodox Church. Blink, 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 blink. Parents too polite to say anything in front of Ian and Tula, unlike Gus and Maria, and having the reception at Aphrodite's palace. But don't, just to let you know, the Parthenon backdrop is optional.
I definitely would get the Parthenon backdrop. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a must.
Yes. If you're going to have your fucking reception at Aphrodite's palace, then you need to go all out with the fucking Parthenon backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm so glad we're on the same page with this.
Balls and columns to the wall.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's got to be the name of our episode. Tula produces a gaudy bedazzled, fur-lined photo album that her cousin Nikki made her and takes out brochures for the church and reception space, handing them to Ian's mom and dad. They look stunned as they politely thumb through the pamphlets. So much for this being an appropriate mixer for Ian's dad's business associates. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, no.
You know, because I've known some people who have been on the more affluent side. And when they get married, what happens is their parents invite all of their, like, business associates so that they can schmooze them at the wedding.
Oh, that sounds so much fun.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's because it's about them. Well, since they're paying for it, I guess.
Since they're paying for it, you know, you might as well use that business opportunity.
Right. Uh-huh. You could write it off, right? You could write off the wedding because I have a bunch of my colleagues here, right?
Oh, and my God. Yes. Yeah. Genius. Mm. If you close a deal at that wedding, then you definitely can write it off. That's like 100%. And I'm not talking about sleeping with your secretary. That's not closing the deal.
Oh, shit. That went right, left, upside down quick.
With the date decided, the couple gets to planning, or at least trying to plan, their wedding. Really? Tula's family has planned the wedding when they weren't looking. Unbeknownst to them, Tula's mom has already ordered the invitations. They have been made. They have been delivered. The cards have giant Greek flags on the front and have changed Ian's mom's name from Harriet to Harry. Yeah, cousin Nikki has decided on the bridesmaids' dresses without Tula. A light blue mermaid-style dress monstrosity, and Tula's dad is inviting everyone Greek to ever live near them or the Greek Isles to the wedding. Ian magnificently holds his tongue even after he burns his hand on a hot plate Maria plops in front of him. Gus immediately produces Windex and sprays Ian's hand down. Ian's confused, but turns to Nick and asks how to say thank you to Maria in Greek for the food. Nick, without skipping a beat, says, Oraya Vizia. Ian loudly repeats, Oraya Vizia, to Maria, and everyone in the kitchen freezes because he just told his fiance's mom that she has nice boobs. Maria and Gus slap Nick on the back of the head, and then Gus covers Nick in kisses because he's still such a clever boy. Oh, how cute.
You sexually harassed your mother. Here's a dollar.
Boys will be boys.
Next, we get a sweet scene upstairs between Tula and her brother Nick. They're in their pajamas sitting on her bed, and he apprehensively hands her a brochure explaining that he's going to go back to school now, too. He wants to learn about painting and art. He's going to start slow at night classes and then work from there. Tula is thrilled and tells him so, and he smiles shyly and says, well, you started it.
Aww.
She smiles even bigger because she's come a long way. And Nick adds, Tula, don't let your past dictate who you are, but let it be part of who you will become. She looks surprised and softly says, oh, Nick, that is beautiful. And he agrees, that dear Abby sure does know her stuff. They chuckle, and he gives his sis a goodnight kiss on the cheek. Cut to Tula calling her mother the next day, who is at home furiously peeling a huge mound of potatoes. Tula informs her that Ian is going to pick her up, and then they're going to go get Ian's parents, and they should be at their portcullis house in about an hour. Maria huffs, yes, good, fine, which prompts Tula to ask, what are you doing? Maria matter-of-factly tells her, I'm peeling the potatoes. But why? Tula already peeled potatoes that morning. Maria explains there's a lot of people, and Tula counters it's only 7 with Ian's mom and dad. And, Maria adds, the rest of the family. Tula almost drops the receiver. No, Mom! I told his parents to come have a quiet dinner to meet my family. Yes, Mom agrees, but they might as well meet everyone else, too. But she can't talk anymore because Taki is at the back door with the whole lamb for the party. In about an hour, Tula, true to her word, and Ian's parents pull up to the portcullis house. There are tiki torches lining the yard, a fire spit with the whole lamb roasting on it, and about 30 family members milling about. When they get out of the car, Ian's parents look overwhelmed, and even more so when the family descends on them. Gus pushes his way to the front of the crowd and introduces himself and all his brothers and all his brothers' kids, who are inexplicably all named Anita, Diana, and Nick. Then he gives Ian's parents very big, awkward hugs. They are speechless until Maria pushes forward and introduces herself, to which Ian's mother hands her a bundt cake. There's an awkward exchange where Maria, not familiar with bundt, tries to figure out what it is. After some back and forth, she proclaims finally, "Oh, it's cake!" and carries it into the house, but not before whispering to her sister, "There is a hole in this cake." Nick finds Ian and tries to suggest that he say, "Ico treha arhidia," which he assures him means "everyone come in the house" in Greek. Ian says, "I'm not falling for that again," and stupidly asks Angelo how to say "everyone come in the house" in Greek. Angelo echoes, "It's echo treha arhidia," which convinces Ian. And he asks for everyone's attention and loudly proclaims, "Echo treha arhidia." The family all start cracking up. Uncle Tacky leans down to get a closer look at Ian's crotch because he just announced to the family that he has three testicles. He immediately attempts to chase down Nick and Angelo for revenge, but they're too fast.
I can't even imagine. If I were bringing my parents, if I told them, "No, it's just going to be an evening, you're going to meet the parents, my siblings, that's like it." If I, like, my parents would die.
My dad would be thrilled. He'd be like, "Oh my God, a party. Yes."
Yeah.
That's why he used to love going to my sister's ex-in-law's houses. He was like, "Oh, we're going to go over to Junior's parents. There's always 50 or 60 people there to have a good time with." There's a barbecue. There's beer. There's lots of people talking loudly. That was his cup of tea.
Exactly. So, like, you grew up in, like, more of the equivalent of the Portocolis household, and I grew up
way more so than yours. Yeah.
Of the equivalent of the Miller household. Mind you, like, both are exaggerations of our own households.
Yes. Agreed.
But yeah. Oh, the night is off to a rocky start, and inside the house, it doesn't get much better. Ian's parents are shuttled to a couch where they sit and are shortly joined by Vula. She proclaims they're family now, and since they are, she regales them with her most recent medical procedures, where she had a tumor on her back removed, and in that tumor, her doctor found teeth and a spinal cord. "That's right," she says matter-of-factly. "I had the remnants of my twin in that tumor that was on my back my whole life." This shocks Ian's parents, but thankfully Tula shoos her away to let their guests settle. But they don't go for long, because a barrage of Greek food and ouzo shots parade in front of them. They are polite and take the drinks of ouzo every time they're offered. "Be careful, boy." Ew, fucking ouzo, man. But unfortunately, that is 80 proof liquor. Tamara has done her research. Thank you, Tam.
When I wanted to see where I could find ouzo, I found out what the alcohol content was, because at the end of this night, his parents are like swaying back and forth and everything looks all blurry to them.
There were a few instances in the script where I was like, "Tamara did some research. Thank you, Tamara."
And there's quite a few parts in this script where you added the stuff that I wanted to add but didn't, because I was just like, "I don't think I have time for that." So I also appreciate that. Some of those gem moments and those phrases that I'm like, "Oh, she put that in. Good job, Corinne."
I think we make a good team.
Thank you.
In between that and all the rich food, they are feeling quite queasy. So much so that when the lamb is done and Gus beelines towards them so that they can be the first to taste it, they actually decline. He looks a little disappointed but moves on just in time for Maria to emerge with the bundt cake, which she's fixed by putting a potted plant in the hole. At the end of the evening, after everyone has gone home, Tula overhears her dad complain that Ian's parents looked at them like they were animals at the zoo. I think they just were so drunk that they had no choice. But
No, I mean, at the beginning, too, when Ian's mom was like, oh, it's a bundt cake, when they had that exchange.
Yeah.
And her mom's like, bundt, bundt. And she's like, bundt, it's bundt. And she started getting, like, worked up. And her husband was even like, honey, calm the fuck down. So it's just like there was just those little differences. And when they handed them the
You know, my pastries. Mama would be doing the same thing with bundt.
Oh, fuck. And then when they handed them the pastries, they kind of looked at the pastries like, oh God, I don't even want this, because Vula just explained how she had an ingestive tumor that ate her twin. So, I mean, I didn't have an appetite after that either. But it was just like a whole comedy of errors and misunderstandings and very vastly different cultures colliding.
Oh, for real. No, and I do think that they were like, they did not know how to process it.
Yes.
You know?
And they were kind of dropped into like a quiet dinner with my family of 50 to 60 people. And
for
nothing
real.
With that family is quiet when they're all together. Just saying.
No. Gus continues, this marriage is not going to work because his family are like dry pieces of toast. Maria tries to console him, but it's no use. He is sure this relationship was doomed from the start. Upstairs, Tula sits in her bedroom, contemplating what she heard. Her mom comes in and asks, what's wrong? And Tula asks if her marriage is killing Dad. Maria sits down and spits some wisdom. Back in Greece, we saw lots of wars. The Turks, the Germans. Every time they left a mess. But Maria's mother would always say, oh, we're so lucky to be alive. Maria knew different. Living under control is not a life. So, she tells her daughter, I came here and see you and Nico and Athena. You're living a life that is meant to be lived. Just then, their Yaya, who has suffered delusions throughout the entire movie, sprinting away from the house, going into neighbors' yards, accusing random people of being Turks, you know, She's been a handful.
The huge.
But this time, Yaya has a moment of clarity. She brings in a box that contains her wedding photos. And this is where Tamara did remarkable research. Thank you.
Well, how do you describe them? I'm all the Stefanias.
Yeah. And the Stefanias, or Greek Orthodox wedding crown, the family has used for generations. Think of a little flower girl crown that people, that like little girls wear down their heads when they're going down the aisle, except bigger for adult people. But it's for the bride and groom.
And there's two of them, and they're connected by a ribbon.
Yes. And I say, and Tamara has obviously done a little research on this, which is much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Yaya puts the crown, one of the crowns, on Tula's head, and they all stand in front of the mirror, three generations of Portokolis women. And it's in that moment Tula knows everything's going to be okay.
Until the morning of the wedding.
Yeah.
Tula wakes up to a quiet house, or so she thinks. She goes down the stairs to find 20 of her cousins, aunts, and nieces, all in various stages of readiness. There's curlers, nail polish, and mustache bleach everywhere. Everyone squeals when they see her. Tula! She's the bride-to-be. Cousin Nikki, who's closest to Tula, gets a concerned look on her face and asks, wait, what is that? Pointing at her chin. Tula reaches up and feels a huge sit. She gasps, oh my God, and races back up the stairs with her family in tow. Gus sees her whiz by and asks, eh, what's wrong? When they tell him of Tula's zit, he shrugs and offers, ah, put a little Windex on it. There is a whirlwind of concealer and makeup and dresses and nylons, which turns into a frenzy when somebody announces, why aren't you all ready? The photographer's already here. And for the rest of the scene, we don't even see Tula, just a swarm of people that are attending to her. When she finally emerges, she has more makeup on than ever and a huge, fluffy, lacy, frilly wedding dress on. Her family all gush over her, but when she gets...
Not enough rouge.
So, bite your tongue, woman. She could probably stand in the middle of the street and stop cars with all the rouge she has on her cheeks.
It's like my mom applied that rouge.
Oh, my lands. It looks like somebody slapped her.
Oh.
But when Tula finally gets a glimpse of herself in the mirror, she says,
I'm a snow beast.
Next, we see the church, which seems to be a bit one-sided. The portcullis side is chock full, while Ian's family takes up about a third of the pews. The ceremony is very traditional, and Ian's parents wonder how they're supposed to know what's happening. Ian's father leans into his wife and shrugs playfully, saying, "I don't know, it's all Greek to me," causing her to chuckle and nudge him playfully. At the end of the ceremony, the newlyweds kiss and race to the limo while the wedding party waves after them. Once in the backseat, Tula de-beasts, or wipes off all the makeup and starts peeling back layer after layer of the dress. Ian asks who did her makeup, and when Tula divulges it was her aunts, he remarks that drag queens could get some tips from them. They get to the reception venue and look at it with apprehension. Ian tells her it's too late to elope now, so she flips down the shade mirror to check her makeup. Everything looks good, and thank God her zit has shrunk. When she mentions this to Ian, he's surprised because he also woke up with the zit this morning. He points to his face where it was, but it's gone now because he put a little Windex on it.
Aww!
And they go inside for the reception.
I think I may have even tried putting a little Windex on a zit at some point, thinking, you know, if it works for John Corbett, maybe it'll work for me.
I know. What's the harm? Well,
plus, it's how I attract all the gents with my sweet, sweet Windex scent.
Oh, yeah. It's got dual purpose actions. Mm-hmm. Part of it's the scent. Part of it's the power of taking away blemishes.
And I look so reflective and shiny. No streaks. A little later, the reception is in full swing until Gus gets up to make a speech. Everyone quiets as he introduces the two families, the Miller family and the Portcullis family. In true Gus fashion, who throughout the movie has explained to anyone who will listen the Greek roots of any word ever, as Tamara so mentioned kimono, he explains that the name Miller comes from the Greek word milo, which means apple. So, there you go. And portcullis translates to orange. So, here we have apples and oranges. We may be different, but in the end, we're all fruit. The crowd laughs appreciatively, but he's not done. He and Maria also have a gift for the newlyweds. Gus makes his way over to the couple and hands Ian a folded piece of paper. And perhaps this is Tamara's fantasy, but I think this might be my nightmare.
Ian, nope, definitely my fantasy.
Ian carefully unfolds the paper and gasps, telling Tula, "Oh my God, they bought us a house!" Tula gets teary-eyed and they give each other a meaningful look before she rushes into her father's arms while the wedding attendees cheer. And my only question is the house next door or across the street? Because fuck my life, no.
You'll find out.
Tamara's like, "I do not care. It's a motherfucking house.
If you don't like it, you could live there for a few months, sell it, and move wherever you want."
Then surprisingly, after Gus has tenderly hugged his daughter, he hugs Ian too. Maria follows suit, hugging Tula, telling her that she loves her, and then hugging Ian, saying, "I love you too." Everyone makes their way to the dance floor. Tula stops to snag Ian's parents. Pa Miller tells her what a nice ceremony they're having, and Ma Miller says, "I just need a little more ouzo before heading out to the dance floor." She takes a quick shot and she's ready to roll. The Millers have seemed to lighten up a bit. Pa Miller asks Tula, "What do you say before you drink?" And she tells him, "Yassis." He answers back, "Yassis," and prompts Harry to join him on the dance floor. Who's Harry?
Who's Harry? His wife, because they mislabeled him and listening to her announcements.
Nice. Nice one. Oh,
he says that. He's like, "Come on, Harry, let's go." And I was like, oh, they really did just like lighten the fuck up.
Aww.
Once they get acclimated, they seem pretty cool.
Get enough ouzo in anyone and they'll, you know, they'll be limber for Jesus. Yeah. They all go to dance the
I have no idea how to pronounce that.
Okay, this is another part of Tamra Research 2023, which I'm super impressed by. They'll go dance the Corinne's bad pronunciation, Kalamashinos, which is where you dance in a circle with a counterclockwise rotation while holding hands. Vula sits on Taki's lap and watches the newlyweds as they spin around happily and remarks, "Oh, Taki, he looks Greek to me." Then we hear Tula's voiceover where she admits, "Sometimes I'm afraid it never happened, that I'll wake up and I'll still be buttering garlic bread at my family restaurant. But I figured out some things, like my family is big and loud, and yes, we roast lamb on a spit on the front yard, but they're my family, and they'll always be there for me." Cut to a lovely neighborhood. Tula's voice explains that her and Ian moved into the house their parents bought. Just a minute later, she was pregnant, and 6 years after that, it was her daughter's turn to go to Greek school. We see her in the driveway as her daughter protests, "Why can't I go to Brownies? I don't want to go to Greek school." Tula tells her that she has to, but adds that when she's older, she can marry whoever she wants. Ian comes up behind her and says, "Aw, thanks, honey." And they all walk down the sidewalk. When the camera pans out, we realize that the Miller's house is right next door to Tula's parents. Ha, ha, ha. Literally next door. And everyone greets them as they pass by. Greek music plays them out. Ding, 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 ding. The end. So, Tamra, what did you think of My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
This is so funny. I've always really liked this movie, but this is one movie where I did the outline and I appreciated it even more, which is rare. It's like the clever writing, the funny phrases, the characters and everything, just like it didn't take me to the movie, which generally is what happens when I have to sit and watch it and write and watch and write and watch and write and watch and write. But I'm going to give this movie 4 dry kisses. It's pretty high up there in my ratings. I just have to knock it down a little bit for the chauvinism, the sexism, and the gender roles, and the stipulations they put on their women that they don't put on their men, and the fact that I know that Tula couldn't have, like, rebelled against her family, but I wish she once or twice, like, told her daughter, like, "Dad, you are being archaic and unfair," and yeah, I wish there was more of that conversation where she could tell him, like, "What's the difference between me and Nick, honestly, besides tits and a dick?" Like, I kind of wish she would have confronted it a little bit more. But other than that, it was still a very lovely movie. I did get nostalgic for the Big Loud family. It did remind me of mine. And now that you mention it, the Millers did remind me of yours. But yeah, it's a very sweet story. I love the arc. I loved how Tula really became herself. And that's why I liked this movie so much and thought it fit with the theme of this month.
Yeah.
Because she gave herself a makeover. And it wasn't like she just wanted to finally be brave and come into her own. And she did it, like, with a freaking vengeance. So much so that her brother followed suit and was like, "You started this, you changed, you went to school, you went against the family." And I'm sure she broke that fucking door open. And because when they, one part, I think it was Easter, when everybody's milling around and getting to know each other, we didn't put this in the script, but one of Tula's cousins is like, "Oh, they want to ask you something." "No, no, I don't want to ask you something." "Oh, she wants to ask you. Go ahead and ask her, ask her. Does Ian have any brothers?" So she broke the mold. Like, the family is branching out. They're not just going to marry Greeks to breed more loud Greek eaters. She totally changed the projection of that family just by being the person she wanted to be. So 4 dry kisses. What do you give it, Corinne?
If I were scoring it on the theme, I would definitely give it 4 dry kisses. I am scoring it on how much I liked the movie. And unfortunately, watching it this time around with a more critical eye, it did not serve me well.
Opposite Miller. Miller, Miller, Miller.
I'm going to give it 2 3/4 dry kisses because it's not a bad movie. It's a good movie. However, kind of like how you were saying last time with Lars and the Real Girl, how, you know, you you sort of like to watch a romance and get kind of swept up in the romance of it all, you know. Mm-hmm. And for this movie, I am swept up in the romance of it all. And then there's the whole marriage thing that happens. Yeah. And Ian and Tula are completely disregarded in every way, shape, and form. And I know it's funny because, like, oh, they're just being swept along by their family and blah, 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 blah. But for me, it was just really sad and dispiriting and very controlling. And it rubbed against everything that I like. And I did not find joy in that. And
I could see how you'd... I also think that Tula and Ian didn't really give a fuck. Like, they were kind of like, yeah, we're getting married because this is what we have to do, and going through the motions, like how Ian went through the Greek Orthodox Church, because he's like, I'm not really religious and I don't care. I think both of them are like, well, we got to get married because that's what the family expects, but we don't give a shit what happens. That's why she wore that god-awful dress and looked like drag queens could give her makeup
But I think that if she and Ian had been planning the wedding without the interference of his parents, without the interference of her parents, they would have had a wedding, and it would have been a very different wedding, completely different. And I just feel like that their voice was not even taken into account. And
it most certainly was not.
No. The whole end of the movie just kind of made me sad. And like when the dad buys them a house, I'm like, oh, what a fucking power play. Like, this is really sucking. You're going to be like, stuck next door. Yeah. I'm like, this is just really awkward and bad. And it's not like, oh, here's money for a house for you. This is, no, you're stuck next door. And it's going to be a big problem if you decide to sell it, you know. And so, yeah, it's just the whole last part of the movie is just a womp, 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 womp for me.
I sadly think that the next door house, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can go over to the in-laws, have all the ooza I want, and then be able to walk home willy-nilly. Oh, I need somebody to watch my daughter real quick. I'm just going to walk them next door, just... easy peasy, you know, grandma's not ever going to say no.
I can see the appeal of that, and I think that that's great. And I also can see grandma just coming on over to my house anytime she wants. And, oh, I'm just going to rearrange. Your kitchen just doesn't make sense. I need to arrange it how it works for me. And, you know.
Oh, you're going to clean my kitchen? Shucks, no, don't do that. Absolutely not. My counter, it probably would look better if you scrub it down a little bit, I'm just saying.
I'm like, don't fucking touch my shit. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, touch it. Touch it all you want. If you're going to make it better, go right ahead.
But is it better?
That's where we differ.
You can't find anything when you go to cook. Yeah. Nah.
I mean, that's funny that you say that, because I did see that in one of the IMDb reviews that somebody was like, I love this movie for like the first... half to three quarters of it. Yeah. But then when that, like, what'd she say? There's got to be some sort of conflict. And when the conflict goes away, or the tension, it just kind of... I didn't find that, though. But we
I'm
don't
like, I felt
agree.
Like there was conflict well into the end. But that's just because I don't like being told what the fuck to do. And I don't like being, you know. And so it was just like...
Really?
I know. It's shocking, right?
Really? So, I know, and I'm just like, eh.
Yeah. I'm like, ugh. I don't care the amount of money. I don't care the whatever the fuck. No. Nope. 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 Get the fuck away from me. I want my independence. So.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, I want security.
Yeah. But I mean, I have security, so, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So you wouldn't know how it feels not to have it.
Yeah. I understand how it feels not to have it, but yeah. No, I...
It's a difference between understanding and actually being in it. It's, yeah. It's something that could change your whole dynamic and your point of view and everything about you.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. Oh, so that's the joy of 2 3/4 dry kisses. So, Tamara, what do we have coming up next week?
It is the movie Anything's Possible. It's a Corinne pick.
Woo-woo. And it's the 2022 version of this movie, not as in there's just more than one movie named Anything's Possible.
Got it. It's not a remake.
But
that is a common name that would I could imagine seeing in more than one movie.
Yeah. So 2022, Billy Porter produced movie Anything's Possible, trans teenage girl coming of age story. Rom-com, action, love it. So super excited about that. And if you have anything you'd like to say about My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Anything's Possible, Free to Be You and Me Month, feel free to reach out to us at wondrakiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us via the social medias on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at wondrakiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anytime you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. My life was boring before I met you. I skipped a few lines there.
A little bit, yeah. I was like, she just looks intoxicated because his life was boring.
I know. I was like, wow, okay.
Oh, you're so boring. That's hot.
It's like nobody realizes how special you are except for me. Ooh.
That's probably the best compliment I've ever gotten.